Fashion Tech Applied is published. My co-authored book taking you through 6 chapters and covering the technologies and innovations powering the fashion industry. I'm Peter Jun Ho Sang, founder and CEO of Beyond Form, and welcome to the special podcast series Applied. Each episode, I'll be sitting down with incredible fashion tech professionals that are featured inside the book. On today's episode, I'm sitting down with Vadim Rogovsky, co-founder and CEO of 3D Look, an AI-powered 3D body scanning solution that encompasses fit and body sizing, virtual try-on, and health data. We've discussed previously on the podcast show how difficult it is to get fit right, either for the consumer or the brand. There's no standard way of doing things, which leads to problems like high return rates at e-commerce sites. However, Vadim and his team have managed to create a sophisticated and layered solution that seems to be taking us one step closer to solving such issues.
It's not enough. Brands need to understand how their real consumers are different from their fit models, because fit model informs their fit intent of the brand. But what if real consumers are totally different? And that's what we see when we do these researches for well-known brands. Data allows brands to basically find the fundamental reasons of return.
Let's get into the conversation with Vadim on this episode of Venturing into Fashion Tech. How are you today, Vadim?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here.
I'm glad to have you on the podcast show talking about 3D Look, your entrepreneurial journey, and virtual fitting rooms today. To give our listeners some context, the virtual fitting room market is projected to reach $10.57 billion by 2028, with a growing compound annual growth rate of 19.29%, according to verified market research. So it's an up-and-coming industry, and it's growing very, very quickly as well. Various reports state that the average return rate for online fashion retailers is around 30% and can be as high as 50% during the holiday periods. And I'm sure you're going to talk about this a little bit later on, Vadim. Fit is extremely difficult to get right in the fashion industry from all perspectives, and many startups are tackling it in various ways, from virtual try-on to AI-powered fit recommendation systems, through to body scanning and more. I'm so excited to see and hear how, Vadim, you are tackling from your perspective. I think you're what we can class as a serial entrepreneur. Am I correct there?
Yes, I mean, I think it sounds right.
3D Look is in your first rodeo, and I imagine that you've got many startup battle scars, which I think come in handy in the context of creating a startup. Tell us about your journey and how you ended up building your current company.
I've been building startups since I entered the university. It was more like a fun for me, more like a hobby, I would say, more like pet projects. But I started to learn to code. I started to learn how to do like digital marketing, etc., and started to launch my first small projects. So I went all the way from a web studio, social games development studio, e-commerce store, where we were actually, so at that time we were selling these t-shirts with equalizer screens that reacted to that responded to music, right? It was a long time ago, like 2009 or something, and I was making pretty decent money as a student. And then I went back to apparel like 10 years later, which is also funny. But and my projects got bigger, and my first real company was in ad tech, so in advertising. It was a SaaS tool that helped small, medium-sized businesses to run their ads on social media. So it didn't take off as well as I expected, but I still managed to. So the company was called AdCenter, and I started it in 2011 or something, and I sold it in 2014. So it was a small exit, but still, I mean, I learned a lot, made all kinds of mistakes I could have made at that time, but still managed to get some kind of outcome, right? Not the outcome I expected, though. And at that time, I was already, before I even sold that, I already started to work on my second company, because I already realized that my first company wasn't going to be really big. My second company was also an ad tech, but it was a platform that helped mobile app developers to monetize their audiences. And on the other end, it helped another group of app developers to promote their apps, and we basically in any country. So we helped them to get installs, to get active users according to their criteria. And that company went really well. So my first company was bootstrap. My second company was also bootstrap until one of the VCs was basically very, they were very persistent, trying to convince me to get their money. I didn't understand at that point, like, why do I need to raise any capital, because my company was profitable. Then I realized that obviously it can grow much faster if I get the capital and apply it properly. And also at the same time, their final argument was that I could take some money off the table through secondaries. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that option actually existed. So, right. So that I agreed. So I took some money off the table. So the round was, it was Series A of 2014, 2015. It was $2 million. Now it's kind of small for a seed round according to current criteria. But at that time it was a pretty substantial Series A round. But yeah, I mean, in the end of the day, EdTechMark, it started to get into very bad territory because lots of bad actors, lots of scammers, lots of fraud, and lots of people tried to make money by creating some artificial traffic, artificial installs. And I realized that, and the multipliers for companies started to go dramatically going down, and I was growing a company. We were reinvesting all the profits into growing company and growing the capitalization. And at some point of time, I realized, no, I need to do something else. I was lucky to take some money off the table. So I invested almost all of them into 3D Looking, to my next company. And I appointed a different CEO at the previous company. And at the end of the day, we couldn't sell the company and we folded it. But at that time, I was already full-time working on 3D Look because I anticipated that. Why 3D Look? Because I wanted to use my experience in building SaaS, in building software for enterprises, right? And also my experience with mobile devices, but not from advertising perspective, but more like from a technology perspective. Especially, I was very fascinated about camera and about computer vision applications that started to emerge, especially around 2015, 2016. And eventually we decided to solve a problem of measuring human body using just a smartphone camera that many people tried to solve for the last 20 years and didn't succeed. That's how I got into my current company, yeah.
So I imagine being chased by VC investors must have been quite a funny feeling. How did you feel at that moment in time when they're like, take my money? Like, how did you react to something like that?
That's a good point. I mean, well, at the time, I was a bootstrapped entrepreneur. I didn't know about any other ways to be successful as a founder. Then it was pretty opposite when in 2021, 2022, founders knew that there is only one way to be successful is to raise capital. But like 7 years before it was just bootstrapping was the primary way to grow your startup to become successful. I recently wrote a post about it on LinkedIn. So, and yeah, I mean, at that time I was like, why do I need this? I don't need this. We can grow 50% a year, 100% a year. Like, we are profitable. Like, why do I need this, right? Yeah, at 3D Look, it was my first comp where I had to learn how to fundraise properly, because at Clicky, in my second company, I didn't actually know how to fundraise, and basically that VC was just the most persistent, and I was like, I'm going to take it because they offered cash out option as an incentive.
So you've been quite fortunate then so far on your journey, because not every startup founder gets an exit where they can make money, and to do that more than once, to be able to cash out more than once, is quite a journey already. So you mentioned there that you are now on your third company, 3D Look. What is 3D Look specifically?
We started not according to the startup books, right? We didn't start from a consumer problem. We started from a technology problem. Because after a lot of research, we understood that, yeah, if we solve a technology problem, we're going to find a market for it, for sure, or multiple markets. Because if we start from a consumer problem, still, we might not be able to solve it using this kind of technology. Because for me, it was always important to use, like, all my companies were built around, I can call it a mission to build companies around cutting edge technology. Try to be one of the first entrepreneurs to bring these innovative technologies into businesses, right? By basically combining technology and user-friendly, like AI interfaces, to bring use cases to business. At that time, what we did was also very innovative. And now with 3D Look, we also, it's totally different market, totally different solution, totally different everything, accept the fact that it's still very related to my mission, and also that it's still my third B2B company. It was all built around the notion that we wanted to give power to consumer by scanning. So consumers could scan their bodies using a smartphone and then use their body data in different ways and applications to pick apparel that fits you, or to use this in a weight loss app to see how you progress towards your fitness goal, or use it in your with your doctor for a remote checkup, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? But obviously, after a lot of customer development, we figured out that fashion e-commerce, fashion manufacturing still is at that time, it was the industry with the biggest pain. Still until this day, we are focused on fashion, although we also started to approach digital health and fitness, and I can talk about that separately. But our value proposition now is that we increase conversions, reduce returns, but moreover, which is the even most important thing, we bring body data intelligence to brands and retailers. We help them to understand how their actual consumers look and how their body data correlates with what they buy, what they keep, what they return. So only we believe we are convinced that if you solve this, this is the only way you can solve the problem of returns.
You mentioned that you started with the technology first. You don't think that was a little risky?
As in two previous cases, it started from a passion. It was just very exciting to see if it's going to work or not. It was like a research. So basically, I personally funded this research. Did research for a couple of years until we understood, yeah, actually it kind of works, but we need this, we need that, we need to scale our R&D team, we need to start maybe doing some marketing. So that's it. At that time I started to raise capital, but before that I've been funding it myself. And yes, we definitely, it was just super exciting. I mean, at first I understood that, yeah, if it works, if we can build a kind of a business on top of it, the exit outcome can be great. But basics of that was just, I could not do that, right? It was just the most exciting thing for me at the time. Nothing else could even be compared to that. And I didn't think about money as the direct outcome. I do this for money. No, I did it for fun. And also it was super interesting, a lot of learnings. But then gradually we started to understand, okay, there is a huge potential there that can also lead to financial outcome as well.
It seems to be working for you. 3D Look is thriving. As I said right at the start of this episode, fit in the fashion industry is so notoriously to get right. And our listeners that come from the industry, I can imagine, understand that it's difficult, whether that's done through technology or not. Why do you think it is so difficult for the industry to get fit right for the consumer? And then how does the technology aim to solve that at 3D Look?
Because we are a B2B2C company. So we offer our software to businesses, and they pay us for that, to brands. But we also interact with the consumer directly. And the success, long-term success of what we do depends on the consumer, first of all. And what is interesting that we always thought that it's the main thing is to convince the brand to use it. But the complexity here is that everyone understands that it's important. Everyone understands that fit is important. Everyone understands it that, yes, it's better to get to understand what size you need to buy so you don't have to return it. So you don't have to do bracketing, basically, to buy one item in three sizes and then return two of them, right? But brands understand it. We never had problems to convince brands to give it a shot. Of course, some brands are more innovative, some brands are less innovative, some brands are super slow. That's another problem of the industry. But still, we almost never had to work hard to convince a brand to at least kind of talk to us, right? They came to us, they're still coming to us. We don't have a sales team, right? But on the consumer side, it's much harder because consumers were trained for decades that returns are free of charge. Just buy a few items, you return, you return them, no one cares. And there was a generation that basically grew up doing that. And it actually started even not online. It started even like in countries like Germany, it started with catalogs, with paper catalogs. So it started in a few generations where actually they grew up doing that. And it's very hard to rewire them to do things differently. Of course, Generation Z is it's easier with them. They really embrace it, but it takes much more time to educate consumers rather than brands. So, and that's why it's one of the complexities of the of this problem, because solving it fundamentally goes against the way how consumers were trained by the brands to do that previously, right? And also, of course, when we talk about fit, many people in the industry know that size charts already became a marketing tool, like vanity sizing, et cetera, right? So they don't represent, they often don't represent the actual fit of the garment. Secondly, the same brand, same item produced on two different factories fits differently. And also we have a lot of subjective factors here when consumer just gets the right size, but still something is off. So, and all of this combined, I mean, it's a very hard problem to solve. That's why so many startups failed, so many corporates failed. But why we believe, why we see that this is the right time to solve it, because, yeah, I mean, new generation is kind of getting more and more buying power. Brands started to understand that fast fashion models isn't going to work in the long term. Sustainability is top of mind for many brands, countries, governments, people, etc. And technologically, from technology standpoint, it's easier now to solve this problem. So we believe that now is the right time to solve it.
Well, it's exciting that you have companies queuing up to work with you, Medim. Again, I think another area that is quite enviable, or a position to be in that's quite enviable for many startups. And just going back to your point there, that the technology itself now is becoming easier to solve this specific issue. And if we do get it right, as you say, the Gen Z are, you know, quite okay with using such technology now quite easily as well, but it's going to reduce that return rate that I mentioned right at the start of the introduction, that up to 50% of, you know, online returns are happening. Huge implications, of course, not just from a business perspective, but for the environment as well. Huge logistics, sustainability issues there, the amount of emissions and carbon going just in and out of the atmosphere just because of this online return that fashion has hardwired us to be, you know, now expect, shall we say, from an online experience. So just going back to the book, Fashion Tech Applied. So 3D Look is mentioned in chapter 4 of the book. So I think this is the first time you've seen it, right, Vadim? So chapter 4 about marketing and how to use virtual fitting rooms within the marketing and retail of fashion brands. And that was my co-author, Von, wearing the garment there. So we discuss in the case study on 3D Look in the book that scanning more than 60,000 people during 2020, this is what happened when the fitting rooms were not in use during COVID-19. How does the data inform the AI, and what can we learn from such, for example, such scans?
I like many startups that tried or are trying to solve this problem only on the front end, by just giving you the right size recommendation. We understand that it's not enough, right? And brands need to understand, first of all, to see how their real consumers are different from their fit models, because fit model informs the right their fit intent of the brand. But what if real consumers are totally different? And that's what we see when we do these researches for well-known brands. And yeah, I mean, some of them already started to incorporate this, or are going to start incorporate these findings into design and production. But yeah, first of all, is to understand, like, really, this data allows brands to understand, to basically find the fundamental reasons of returns. And our game plan is to, like, if we talk about the next few years, to collect enough data to basically to be able to provide industry-wide analytics related to body data of consumers and how it correlates with what they buy, keep, return, so that this alone could become a separate product, separate solution. but we need to collect a bit more data, a bit more diverse data in the next few years to be able to do that, because I think this can bring the biggest value based on our technology. Yeah.
So it sounds like data is a huge important part of your solution, actually the way forward to solve the fit problem as well. Let's just move then away from 3D Look. You discussed at the start of this conversation that you really had to learn how to deal with VC investors, take other people's money and grow a VC-backed company. You yourself now sit on both sides of the fence. Not only are you running your company, but you're also an investor within a small VC fund as well. Why did you decide to do VC investing on top of your day job?
During my previous entrepreneurial gigs, also trying to do some angel investments on the side, I was mentoring startups. I launched one of the first startup accelerators in the Eastern Europe, in Ukraine. I always was trying to be like active in a startup ecosystem by learning from others, by helping others, et cetera, et cetera. And at some point of time, I just realized that. When I started 3D Look for like 4 or 5 years, I went full, like basically 200% of my time only working on this company. And then I realized that I stay in the bubble, right? And I need to do something else in parallel, just for a small fraction of my time. I always wanted to get some VC experience, and also I knew that I can bring a lot of value to the table, because the majority of VCs, they've never been entrepreneurs themselves. They just don't get it. They don't understand it. They didn't feel it. They didn't feel how to lay off people you've worked with for 5 years. Haven't been through this roller coaster. They don't understand entrepreneurs. So that's why I understood that I can try to help to build a really founder friendly VC. And then, because my friend Iher, I know him for a long time, and he's a very active angel investor, and at the time, 2.5 years ago, he was at the point where he wanted to start a fund, and he invited me to join him to launch the fund together. And I liked the mission. So the mission is backing immigrant founders, building mostly B2B companies in the US market, and helping them, serving as a bridge in like different countries and the US. And yeah, I mean, it works well for me, because still my main job is running 3D Look, but what I do on the VC side, I'm responsible for our portfolio. As soon as we invest, I step in and I basically establish a regular dialogue with all the entrepreneurs in our portfolio. We have 41 companies in the portfolio now, and I help them not to hit the wall. I help them with lots of things, lots of issues, etc., that I personally experienced, and when I were also sharing where I did mistakes, what I learned from, and what we hear from them is that they never heard that kind of feedback from any VC, because again, mostly VCs just, they don't have any practical experience in this.
I think the key word that he used there is roller coaster. And he started bound, I think, relate to that word. Are you still on a roller coaster, do you think, Vadim?
Well, so when I talk to entrepreneurs who already have been doing that like for 10, 15 years, and maybe like on the later stages or IPOs, et cetera, it's still a it's always going to be a roller coaster. And when it's not, probably it get boring very quickly. And I think it's always a roller coaster when you find new challenges, when you find new challenges for yourself or for the company. And at any point of time, at any size company, technology company is very vulnerable. Right, maybe after IPO you're in a bit of safe mode, but still not 100%. So yeah, I believe it's still a part of roller coaster for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think it ever stops. If you're in the startup ecosystem, I think you continue on a roller coaster. What do you look for then in a potential investment?
Mostly the founding teams, right? And as I've seen a lot of founding teams before, and also I've seen my teams, and I understand what makes founding team great, and what makes founding team dysfunctional. So I observe like how they behave in calls. I look at how they distributed their shares on cap table, look at their roles, etc. You can uncover a lot of red flags when you just look at the founding team. And previously, in my angel investments, or when I worked on accelerator, I did lots of mistakes when I love the ideas, but underestimate or just overlooked some red flags in founding teams. So now I don't do this mistake anymore. I'm trying not to do this mistake anymore. And yeah, I mean, I look for coachable founders for sure, because coachability, I think, is a balance between saying yes to everything investor says, which is bad, but also rejecting everything because of your ego. I think it plays something, you know, it's located somewhere in the middle between these two things. And yeah, for being for very curious founders, very hungry in a good sense for new knowledge, new experience, and very hardworking, right? And very humble. Obviously, we look at the market, the technology, etc. But it starts from a founding team, even if it's a great idea, great market, amazing opportunity, etc. But founding team is not convincing that they can do it in the long run, we're not going to invest.
I completely agree there, Vadim. There are some startups that I meet where the idea itself is robust and it makes sense, but you just meet the founding team and you're just like, yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to do this in the current team setup. And you just know it's just a no-go from the start. From then what you see, what are some of the biggest mistakes that fashion tech entrepreneurs make?
It's funny, but we didn't invest in any fashion tech companies yet, although I'm trying to find them. And I think we will in this year, but we haven't done it yet. Why? Because a lot of times we don't see balanced founding teams. We see just people with same experiences, same backgrounds, etc. Like, for example, two designers decided they're going to build a company, or two engineers, or whatever. Like, very, very, very rarely I see complementary, diverse teams with complementary experiences. I think it's one of the very strong points of 3D Look, because we have I have two co-founders, and each of us brings totally different perspective to the table, but I very rarely see this. And secondly, yeah, fashion tech is super hard. I mean, it's super hard. It's super hard to get to the point, to get from zero to one. So we have a lot of very pre-seed startups, like pre-revenue, sometimes pre-product, with lots of aspirations, lots of rosy projections. But we just understand that we usually want to wait a bit more until they have at least some tools that is going to work. Fashion tech is this super, super hard, and almost no unicorns came from that industry, maybe just a few. There is a reason for that, but I think it's not going to be forever. I think it also explains why this industry is so attractive, because it's so outdated in some ways, and there are so many problems that can be solved and will be solved.
I completely agree. So on that note, do you think fashion will ever solve the problem of fit?
No, not yet at all. I mean, not yet at all, but I think it is going to be solved.
One can hope.
Of course, it will. I mean, I have to be an optimist running a startup.
Exactly. So I just want to finish off this episode with a quick fire round of questions. The first answer that comes to your head, are you ready?
Yes.
Have you read Fashion Tech Applied yet?
Not yet, but I'm waiting for the book to arrive in my mailbox.
It's coming very soon to you, Vadim. Your favorite fitting garment?
Untucked shorts that fit me really well, yeah.
Best way to get fit right digitally?
Come on, plug for me. I mean, use your fit by 3D Look.
Exactly. One brand that integrates fit tech really well?
That's a good question. I think I can give an example of Bershka that did a really good job together with us.
Best piece of advice for budding entrepreneurs?
Don't stop and stay, even during the hardest times. The main goal should be staying in the business for as long as you can, because you never know what is waiting for you around the corner. And there are a lot of serendipity that can happen. Just stay in the business. Don't stop to learn. And in any case, you're not going to forget this experience, hopefully from a positive side.
Thank you so much, Vadim.
I think you're
better. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to click follow to keep up to date with the latest episodes. And if you like this episode, please give us a review. If you want us to feature a specific theme or guest, please give us a message at beyondform.io. I will see you very soon.